Okay, so we're well into August now, and some really, really hot weather. We've had some very clear nights, and of course, summer traditionally not very good for looking up at the night sky. But there are things to look at. And well, here to explain a little more about what just what there is at the moment is Jane Green. Morning, Jane.
Good morning, Tony.
How are you?
Yes, I'm good. Enjoying the hot weather, shall we say. Enjoying the lovely balmy evenings, even though, as you were just hinting there, Tony, it's not the best for astronomy because obviously the daylight lasts a good deal longer and the nights never really get completely dark, not like we have in the winter.
Yeah, that's the one thing, really. It's the nicest time for being out there looking up at the night sky, but it's the worst time for actually, well, looking at the night sky. But the one thing...
Yes.
The one thing that caught me last a couple of nights ago, I was sitting out and in my back garden. And it was about 11 o'clock and looked up and it was sort of low in the sky, but there was this yellow half moon. It looked like about half moon and it was ever so close. We're in for a super moon this month.
We certainly are. And actually, when you say a half moon, Tony, it's actually what we call a first quarter moon.
Yeah.
And that's because the moon is a quarter of the way around its orbit of Earth. And you are right. It looks bigger. It's not, of course. It's exactly the same size that it always is. But it does look bigger because it is what we call a super moon. And it'll reach its peak at precisely 2:36 on the morning of the 12th of August. And a supermoon is
the end of the week.
Full moon or even a new moon that coincides or nearly coincides with perigee. And that's the closest point that the moon comes to Earth in its elliptic orbit round our planet.
Yeah.
So it's the closest point. And if it happens to be a full moon or a new moon, it does appear to look a little bit bigger. And actually, it is a little bit bigger because it is just that little bit closer as well. So if that coincides with a full moon, so when the sun is shining full on the face of the moon, it does look a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I mean, this also looks very yellow for a moon. And it was, let's say, it was low in the sky to the south. This was about 11 o'clock at night. It was to the south of us. So I would guess that if we're out and about, if the skies are still clear on Friday, which I believe, according to the weather forecast, they probably will be, we're in for quite a spectacle on Friday.
We certainly are. It's going to be a very, very bright night. But of course, that's not good news at all, because we have the Perseids meteor shower that coincides with that as well. So for any listeners who may not be aware, a meteor shower is when we can expect to see many, many more shooting stars in the night sky. But as you know full well, Tony, if we've got a full moon, the full moon sort of bleaches the night sky. It's going to be incredibly bright.
Mm.
So we're really, instead of being, you know, well, I mean, you can see up to 90 or so shooting stars per hour. We're really only going to be able to see the brightest ones punching through that moon, which is it's a real shame because the Perseids is one of the highlight meteor showers of the year.
You know, so you took the words right out of my mouth there, because I was coming to this because while sitting out in my back garden looking at a moon that was extraordinarily bright, even as a half three or three quarter moon or whatever it was very, very bright. But looking straight up instead of to the south. Saw these flashes in the sky because there's so many things that move about in the sky. You've got satellites, you've got the International Space Station, and every now and then you see this thing going across the sky and you think, that's not a shooting star, that is a satellite, or it is the ISS. But this was different. I was looking up and something flashed, and I thought, is that a plane very high up? And it wasn't, and it flashed again, and then a third time it flashed really bright and then just disappeared.
That's probably a satellite.
It wasn't moving.
Oh, it wasn't moving?
No. It was in the one place.
Oh, but it was a really, really quick flash, was it?
Yeah, three times.
Oh, well, yeah, that will be, well, that's probably a number of shooting stars then that you saw in a very, very short space of time. For any listeners who don't know what a meteor shower is, it happens when, as you know, all the planets orbit the sun. The planets are not the only objects orbiting the sun. There's a lot of debris there, like dirt and dust and ice and whatever, from when the planets were formed from an enormous cloud. And that debris is still there. Every now and then we have comets that come in from well beyond the solar system, sometimes not too far out in the solar system, but they're coming in from the icy regions, so they're a long, long way away from the sun. But they travel in their orbits around the sun. They go around the sun normally. Sometimes they can actually be swallowed up by the sun. And then they pass out of the solar system until they loop round and return. But when they leave the solar system, they leave a trail behind. Because, of course, any object that heats up as it approaches the sun, it causes what we call ablation. So the material on the surface, the dust and the gas, heats up. And it vaporizes as it passes around. So it leaves those beautiful cometary tails that we can see, long tails of gas and dust. Absolutely beautiful. But when they've gone, and we think that the tail has gone, the tail hasn't gone at all. That legacy dirt and dust and debris is still there. And of course, as the planets orbit the sun every now and then at regular intervals throughout the year, they will pass through the legacy tail of particular comets. So all that dust and dirt is slamming into the atmosphere, something like 60 miles up. And even a small speck of dust, which may well have been what you saw, Tony, a small speck of dust will vaporize, it'll burn up in the atmosphere. And it's that flash, that vaporizing, that is what we call the shooting stars. So because we're passing through the tail of comet, it's called 109P Swift Tuttle, as we're passing through the tail of that, which loops around the sun every 133 years, we're going to hit some of the leftover material that it's left behind, so we can expect to see more shooting stars. On a really good dark night when there's no full moon, you can expect to see many, many shooting stars, and indeed, you know, I have.
That's the Perseid meteor showers. As I say, these were three little bright lights that just flashed and disappeared. At first, I thought they were aeroplanes in the sky, but way, way too high for that. But the other thing you can see in the sky at the moment, apparently, half of the planets in our solar system are up there visible at the moment, aren't they?
They certainly are. Now is the right time to be outside looking.
Yeah. What have we actually got up there at the moment?
Okay, well, pretty much most of the planets, as you say, Tony. So, firstly, of course, Saturn, and it's looking beautiful, isn't it? It's that lovely butterscotch coloured light. It's rising in the east. Well, it started rising about 9 o'clock at the start of the month, and obviously, it's the best time to see it is around 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, why it's so good at the moment is because it reaches what we call opposition on the 14th of August. Now, opposition is when Earth lies directly between the Sun and another planet. So from our vantage point on Earth, Saturn is effectively opposite, on the opposite side of the sky to the Sun. So when the Sun sets in the west, Saturn appears in the east, and it's visible all night long. So it's the best time to be looking, and you need to be looking towards the constellation of Capricornus, the sea goat. If you look in that area of sky, if you don't know where Capricornus is, check it out online or get an astronomy magazine or any of the apps. They'll show you where the constellations are in the night sky. If you look in the area of Capricornus, you'll see it is the brightest object in that area of sky.
Yeah, it's to the left of the moon, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's moving westward at about 0.5 degrees per week. It's in what we call retrograde motion. And retrograde means that it appears to be going backwards against the stars, but it's not that at all. It's the fact that, as you know, if you think of the order of the planets, so we have the Sun at the centre, and then we've got Mercury, then we've got Venus, then we've got Earth, then we've got Mars, Jupiter and Saturn. And any of the planets that are on the other side of us, so what we call the outer planets beyond Earth, every now and then, of course, because we're closer to the Sun, we actually overtake those outer planets. And as we overtake, they appear to be going backwards. But of course, they're not. They're all still going in the same counterclockwise direction like all the planets.
Yeah, that's like drawing the circles, isn't it, really? And being on the one in the middle, on the inside, you're whizzing around faster than the others, but you're not really.
No. But, you know, it's a little bit similar to the moon at the moment, being approaching perigee, because, you know, when Saturn is at opposition, it actually is at closest to Earth. So it's only, about 824 million miles away, but it's going to make it look just that little bit bigger, and its ring system systems will appear to be their largest, certainly for this year. So this is now the best time to be looking.
Yeah, is it true that even with a pair of binoculars you can see the rings?
No, you can't actually. You can see that there's something, that it's not a complete round disc. Mm. There's sort of little ears almost to either side of it, as Galileo said. And those are the rings. But, you know, you have to use quite a large piece of imagination to visualise that. So you really need a small telescope, and even a small telescope, so a 4-inch one or a 6-inch one, that will clearly show you the rings. And in fact, a 6-inch telescope will even show you the gaps between the rings, like the Cassini division.
Really?
Yes, definitely. Wow. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I remember many years ago, many, many, many years ago, Tony, my first little Russian telescope, and I pointed it towards what I hoped was Saturn, because it was that lovely butterscotch point of light in the sky. Put the telescope, you know, in that direction, looked through the viewfinder, and oh my goodness, it knocked my socks off, because you could clearly see the rings. They were turned towards our planet. I could see the gap in the rings, and you could see the largest moon, Titan, as well. Mm. So if anyone doesn't have a telescope, it's a good time to be getting one, because the planets won't be getting any better. They're fantastic at the moment.
I'm still trying to get used to the things. You know, it's on a tripod and you stand there and look, and it takes so long to locate anything in it. I'm guessing there is a knack to it, and at some point that knack will just probably fall into my lap and it'll work properly. But at the moment, if I was looking for Saturn, I know where to look in the sky for it, but actually locating it in the sky through the narrow lens of a scope is it's almost beyond me at the moment.
It can be quite tricky. I know, you know, many first timers, you know, beginners, they do say the same thing. But I think, Tony, with a large object like what we call a close by planet, a large giant planet, yeah, like Saturn is, and indeed Jupiter as well, if you just scan that area, you know, that rough area with your viewfinder, you will stop. You'll stop at that bright point of light and you'll see that that is the planet. They're quite easy to find. They really are. And of course, with, you know, modern telescopes now, they have these go-to options. So you literally punch into a handheld remote what you want to see. And, you know, if you've lined up your telescope correctly, which is another issue, it will automatically just track to that point and put you straight on that object, and then track it for the remainder of the night. They're pretty amazing.
Oh, the wonders of technology. One of these days I'll get that right. The other one that you mentioned in the sky is Neptune. You don't often hear much about Neptune, do we?
No, you don't. And it's described as being quite an easy object to find in binoculars. It's not exceptionally bright. It's at magnitude, just over magnitude 7. But it started the month in southwestern Pisces. But you can home in on it by looking just over 13 degrees southwest of Jupiter. So you need to locate Jupiter first. Mm-hmm. And that's in the northwest constellation of Cetus, the whale. And then you just need to look southwest about 13.5 degrees. So that is about the width of your fist held at arm's length. So just hold that up to Jupiter. Mm-hmm. And then from there you can see Neptune and vice versa. So and you can point, you know, you can comfortably find that in a pair of binoculars, and it does have a sort of dim bluish colour, and it appears to be a disc as well. You know, when you look at the stars, they are really bright, sparkly pinpoints of light.
They are.
But all the planets are small discs. I mean, some, because they're obviously incredibly far away, are very small discs. But the giant planets that are relatively close to us, so Saturn and Jupiter, you can clearly see that they are.
But they're very bright, aren't they, as well?
They are very, very bright. And Jupiter, through binoculars, is so easy to see, and very, very rewarding as well. Because although it has, I forget the latest count, but well over sort of 70 moons, its four largest moons, which we call the Galilean moons, because they were the moons that were discovered by Galileo, yeah, way back in the 16th century. But you can see those comfortably with binoculars. And as the night progresses, you can see them moving around as well. So, I mean, they're definitely worth seeing. And in a pair of binoculars, they are visible.
Well, we're going to be out there again tonight, I think, taking another look at through clear skies to see just what I can catch up with. I know Mars is out there frequently, Jupiter's up there frequently.
Yes. So, the other Mars is up there, Uranus is up there. They're both rising together in the constellation of Aries just after midnight. So they're up there as well. I mean, a lot of these planets are out now. It's a time to be looking. And of course, as we were saying at the beginning, Tony, it's lovely and warm.
Mm, yeah. You can almost camp out there at the moment and just sort of almost sleep under the stars, just looking up at, and yes. Yeah, what a wonderful way to go to sleep, I would think.
I know. What fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's making the most of what there is in the summer sky, because it's not, as we said at the beginning, it's not always the most exciting time, but there is actually plenty to see. And it's quite a spectacular show going on up there.
Yes, and don't forget Venus, which rises in the morning about 2 hours before the sun.
You see, now you've added another one.
Yes, unmissable. I mean, Venus has been absolutely beautiful. You know, sometimes you wake up in the night, say 4 in the morning. I'm not suggesting that everybody do that, but actually, why not? Because it's the best time of day in the summer. So 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, Venus has been absolutely stunning. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Well, we shall keep an eye on that. And I think on that happy note, we've got enough to be going on with to look up at the sky. We'll all report back in a month's time, and we'll see what else there is at the end of the month and the beginning of September for the night sky. But for now, Jane Green, thank you for talking to us today.
It's a pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
And we'll see you in a month.